Welcome to the Deep Dive. Have you ever wondered what really makes the difference between a media project that runs smoothly and, well, one that descends into chaos? Whether it's a big marketing campaign, maybe a new website, or even a film? The answer, surprisingly often, isn't just the creative spark. It's the paperwork.
It really is. Sounds dull, but it's foundational.
Exactly. So today, we're kind of skipping the usual slow learning curve. We're diving straight into three absolutely essential pillars of media pre-production planning.
A big three.
Right. Asset logs, flow charts, and scripts. And our mission here is to figure out how these technical documents don't just help creative projects.
No, they do more than help.
They actively make sure they're efficient, they're legally compliant, and ultimately, you know, successful, especially in what people call the creative iMedia industry.
In that context, creative iMedia is really important because we're not just talking about, like, Hollywood movies.
Not at all.
We mean pretty much every polished piece of content you see. Web interfaces, company training videos, graphic design work, ads.
All of it.
Yeah. And in these projects, you've got diverse teams, maybe third-party content. Clarity is just, it's everything. It saves money. It saves headaches. These documents are basically strategic tools, communication, and crucially, managing risk.
So if you're listening and you want that shortcut, the quick way to grasp the detailed planning needed to turn an idea into something real, something marketable, stick with us.
Yeah.
We're going to start with maybe the least glamorous, but honestly, probably the most legally vital one, the asset log.
The accountability register. That's what I call
it. Let's unpack that. When we talk about assets, what exactly are we covering? We mean things like stock photos.
Right.
Music clips.
Anything you didn't create from scratch yourself that ends up in the final product. Stock photos, stock footage, sound effects, music tracks, bits you incorporate.
And why track every single tiny element? Doesn't that feel a bit like overkill sometimes?
No, not at all. It might seem like it, but it's actually the difference between being profitable and facing, you know, potentially crippling legal fines. The asset log is your proof. It's basically a simple table, structurally, but the information it holds. It's legally binding. Its main job is to prove, maybe during an audit years later, that every single piece of material you used was obtained legally, licensed properly.
Right. So if I use an image on a poster.
Exactly. Say you used a licensed image and that poster is still out there 3 years later, the rights holder could absolutely ask for proof you paid for that specific use. Without the asset log, well, you're exposed.
Okay, I get it. So if we're logging an asset, let's take that stock image example.
Yeah.
What are the absolute non-negotiable details we have to record for that legal protection?
Right. There are 7 critical pieces of info for each asset. First up, identification. You need the asset's unique ID number, often the stock photo number, and its file name.
Why both?
Because the file name is what your designers might use day to day, like beachsunsetfinal.jpg. But the ID number is what the licensing company uses to track it in their system. One's internal, one's external.
Got it. Internal tracking versus external proof. Makes sense. What's next?
Then a clear description of the asset, wide shot of sunset over a tropical beach and its original source. Which website, which archive did you get it from?
Okay.
After that, the properties. This is more technical image size, resolution, file format.
Yeah.
You know, details that ensure it's actually suitable for how you plan to use it. No point logging an image that's too low res for print.
True. Avoids problems later.
Exactly. But then comes the really, really vital section, the legal documentation. You have to log the specifics. Was a license actually purchased? Was explicit permission obtained for this specific project or use case?
And you mentioned model releases earlier.
Crucial. If there's a recognizable person in that photo, you absolutely must log whether a model release form was signed. That form is your shield if that person later objects to how their image was used.
Oh, okay.
And finally, you need to record exactly where the asset is being used. Page 5 of the brochure, the opening sequence of the video, the website header, that level of detail.
That sounds like a document that needs constant updating and checking. Who are the main people who rely on this log? Who needs access?
Oh, it touches pretty much every technical role involved in creation. Graphic designers, illustrators check it for images. Video editors, sound editors track their media. Photographers might reference it. Editors for books or magazines, too.
But who owns it?
Yeah.
Who's ultimately responsible?
The key person, the one whose job often depends on its accuracy, is the production manager.
Right. They're the gatekeepers.
Absolutely. They're the one who has to be able to say, hand on heart, Yes, every single asset in this final product is legally cleared for use. They sign off on it. It guarantees compliance, stops the whole project from potentially sitting on a legal time bomb.
Okay, so asset logs handle the legal accountability. Let's shift gears now to logical accountability. Flowcharts, we've tracked the what. Now we need to map the how. What makes a flowchart different from just writing down a list of steps? Why the diagrams?
The visual power. Flowcharts take potentially complex problems or processes and translate them into visual sequential logic. They don't just list steps, you see. They break a process down into separate stages. And critically, they show every single decision point.
Those forks in the road.
Exactly. Those if this, then that moments. Whether it's a person making a choice, a piece of software running an algorithm, or an organization following a procedure, they turn potential chaos into something, well, standardized and understandable.
And within media, their use goes way beyond just coding, right? Which is what I think most people immediately think of.
Oh, absolutely. Much broader. Think about, say, safety procedures in a TV studio. A flowchart can map out precisely what every crew member does in an emergency.
So the director, camera ops, audio techs, even the talent.
Everyone follows the same sequence.
Yeah.
No confusion under pressure. They're also used for instructions on using complex gear safely. On the digital side, yeah, they're vital for mapping website processes like a whole user registration flow from sign up to confirmation email, or mapping out the decision trees for characters in a computer game. How does an enemy react when the player does X versus Y? That's a flowchart.
So the users are really diverse then. You've got the technical folks, web developers, game programmers, but also operational roles, production managers, again, camera operators, maybe even talent in certain situations.
Yes. And that diversity just highlights how effective they are as a standard communication tool. Everyone's looking at the same map, the same logic.
Now, to make sure that map is universally understood,
flowcharts
use a standard set of symbols, a visual language. Can you break down the key ones we absolutely need to know?
Sure. There are five core symbols you see everywhere. First, the oval shape. That's the terminator. Simple, but vital. It marks the exact start and end points of the entire process.
Got to know where to start and stop.
Precisely. If you don't have an end determinator, the process technically never finishes, which can be a problem. Then you have the workhorses. The rectangle is the process box. This shows an action being taken, like validate password or resize image.
Okay, action in a rectangle.
And the parallelogram. That's for input-output. This is where data comes into or goes out of the process, like enter username or display error message.
Got it. Process is doing something. Input output is handling data. What about the choices, the if then points?
That's the diamond shape, the decision symbol. This is always where a question is asked, usually one that can be answered with a yes or no, or maybe multiple options, causing the flow to branch off in different directions.
The fork in the road symbol.
You could call it that. And finally, you just have the arrows, the direction of flow. They connect all the symbols and show you the path to follow, the sequence.
Okay, let's use an example. Say we're mapping that website login process you mentioned. What separates a really good, clear flow chart from one that's just confusing? What are the best practices?
Clarity, clarity, clarity. For that login example, the arrows coming out of that decision diamond, they must be labeled clearly. Yes, credentials valid, no invalid credentials, no ambiguity. You also need to be specific inside the boxes. Use variables in the input boxes if needed, like input, username, password. And inside the decision diamond, state the comparison clearly. Password, stored password. Vague language like check details is useless to a developer.
So it's not just the shapes, it's the precision of the text within the shapes.
Absolutely. And a common mistake. Forgetting the END terminator, you need to show where the process concludes successfully or even where it terminates after too many failed attempts.
Good point. And for actually creating these, can you just sketch them or do you need special tools?
You can definitely sketch out the basic logic by hand, just pen and paper. And honestly, basic software like Word or PowerPoint, they have drawing tools that can make these shapes perfectly fine for simple charts.
Okay.
But if you're mapping something really complex, like a huge organizational workflow or intricate game logic, then specialist software is the way to go. Things like Microsoft Visio, Lucidchart, SmartDraw, they offer way more features for managing big, complex diagrams.
Right. Tools for the job. Okay, so we've handled the legal side with the asset log, mapped the logical flow with the flowchart. Now let's jump into the creative execution itself.
The script.
The blueprint for action.
Exactly. This is the document that dictates the final output, what happens when, what people see and hear. It focuses on layout, components, the actual time and action.
Yeah, the script is really where the creative vision meets the practical execution. It combines the narrative with technical instructions.
Mm.
For everyone involved, it's the single source of truth for what ends up on screen or being heard.
So what are the absolute must-have components in a standard script? And how is it typically laid out for, you know, maximum clarity on a busy set?
Okay, standard script format is very rigid for a reason: speed and clarity. Key things include locations. These are usually abbreviated and in caps at the start of a scene description. INT for interior, EXT for exterior, like INT coffee shop day.
Got it. Inside or outside. Then there's all the camera direction, right? Scripts can seem full of jargon there. They can, but it's necessary jargon. The script has to specify shot types and camera movements. You'll see abbreviations everywhere. LS for long shot shows the whole scene or person. MS for medium shot, maybe waist up. CU for close-up faces, emotions, even ECU for extreme close-up, like just the eyes.
Or ELS for extreme long shot.
Exactly. And then movements. Track or dolly means the camera physically moves, usually on wheels or rails. Pan or tilty means the camera pivots left, right, or up, down from a fixed spot. Push-ish and pull-back, it all needs to be there if it's specific.
That seems like a ton of detail to process quickly. This must be where that rigid formatting really pays off.
It absolutely is. The formatting isn't just tradition, it's purely functional. It's designed so key information leaps off the page. For instance, those locations, INT.EXT and all the shot types, LS, CU, etc., they always go on the left margin, and they're always in all capital letters.
So the director of photography, the camera operator, they can spot it instantly.
Instantly. Same principle for character names. They're centered on the page and always in caps right above their dialogue. Then comes the dialogue itself. That's indented beneath the character name. And crucially, scripts often include parenthetical notes right under the character name or within the dialogue, hints on intonation, volume, emotion, angrily, whispering. Helps the actor, helps the sound team.
Right. And what about action? What the characters are doing?
That's in the action description lines. Also, usually left aligned below the location shot info. It describes the scene, the setting, what characters are physically doing, their interactions, everything that isn't dialogue but needs to happen on screen. And sounds too, background music cues, specific sound effects like phone rings or door slams.
So it covers sight and sound. Now, before anyone even shouts action, there's some basic admin info that needs to be right on the cover, especially when scripts get rewritten, which they always do.
Always. And getting this wrong is disastrous. Every script cover absolutely must have the title, the name of the scriptwriter or author, the date it was written or revised, and critically, the draft number or color.
Ah, the draft number. Crucial.
Beyond crucial. Imagine half the crew working from draft 3 and the other half from draft 4 because of unclear labeling. You could waste an entire day, thousands of dollars, shooting the wrong version of a scene. That draft number ensures everyone is literally on the same page.
A simple detail with huge consequences.
Yeah.
And this highly structured format, it makes scripts useful for more than just films, right?
Oh, definitely. Film and TV are obvious, but also animation, radio plays, where sound cues are everything, corporate videos, and even for sequences in video games, like planning out dialogue and actions for non-player characters. It's the sequential roadmap for any time-based narrative media.
Okay, let's try and bring this all together now. We've painted a pretty detailed picture here. We started with the bedrock of legal protection,
mm-hmm.
the asset log.
Mm-hmm. Covering your bases.
Then we move through the necessity of logical structure, mapping processes with the flowchart, especially for complex or interactive stuff.
Defining the path.
And we finished with the script, the detailed roadmap for the creative execution, moment by moment.
Time and action.
The real power seems to be how these three documents work together. The log gives you the legal right to use the pieces. The flowchart structures the how, particularly if they're choices or branches. And the script dictates the final what and when. It feels like this integrated planning is the secret sauce for success.
That's a great way to put it. They're not just separate bits of paperwork you have to do. They're interconnected strategic tools. They manage different kinds of risk, legal, logical, executional. Understanding how they fit together and what specifically needs to be in them, that's genuinely key to making any media project run efficiently, no matter how big or small.
So as you, our listener, go forward thinking about your own projects or maybe studying media production, we want to leave you with one final thought to chew on. A bit of a puzzle.
Okay.
We've established that flowcharts are brilliant at mapping logic and those branching decisions, right?
Wow.
While scripts excel at mapping linear time and action.
Yes, different strengths.
So imagine a really complex media project, something highly interactive, non-linear, like a big choose-your-own-adventure-style video game, maybe with hundreds of potential story paths based on user choices.
A complex beast.
Exactly. In that scenario, which document the script, detailing scenes and dialogue or the flowchart, mapping all those choices and consequences which one would ultimately have to serve as the master guide for the entire production team, and more importantly, why?
That's a good one. Logic versus narrative in a non-linear world.
Something to mull over.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the essential paperwork that actually fuels creative success. Keep exploring, keep learning, and we'll catch you on the next one.